There we go. Okay. Have we had some other people join us?
Yes, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Who else is here?
My name is Nancy.
My name
is Nancy.
And I am Salif.
And Salif. Okay.
Yes.
I did get the pronunciation correct. Yay. Okay. I need to move this out of my way. Close that. So I'm not going to be able to see the chat. I'm on a Mac, and once I start, I can't see it. So again, welcome. We're talking about how to be a direct communicator without crossing the line. And this is a preview of the 7-session course that I'm starting to teach on the 20th of July. And this is my 7th year of teaching it. 7 classes, 7 years. And I usually only teach it once a year, but I decided to do kind of a bonus session. And so we were just talking about why is this important to you? It can make or break your coaching business. And so I was talking about working with a Japanese organization, providing leadership and executive coaching. And I said, how do you want me to show up, as my usual direct Western self, or should I adjust my communication more for your culture, which tends to be less direct? And they said, oh no, we want you to show up as your direct Western self, because our leaders are working internationally, we have offices around the world, and they need to know how to communicate with people who communicate directly. So let's think about this for a minute. If I had just decided without checking in with them that I was going to dial my communication down and be less direct to fit their culture, that would not have been why they were hiring me. And they could have been really disappointed. And in that culture, because it's less direct, they might not have told me. They might just have not engaged with me anymore. I could have lost the contract. And on the other hand, if I had shown up my usual Western direct self, and they could have thought, and that wasn't what they wanted, or that wasn't what they were expecting, they could have thought, wow, she is really rude and offensive, and that we don't want to work with her anymore. And again, I could have lost the contract. And on the other hand, just within one country, we can have differences in culturally on communication. And that's one of the things I cover in the course. And we have lots of practice around this. It's very, almost like a lab, a coaching lab. And one of my first coaches was on the West Coast. And I found myself squirming in my chair and feeling impatient and my attention drifting, watching the minutes tick away as I listened to my laid-back West Coast coach catch me up on his life and ask me about mine in the opening 15 minutes of our hour coaching session. I wanted to get right to the point. And the saving grace for him was that he had in writing and verbally invited me to let him know if anything was getting in the way of our coaching. That was getting in the way of our coaching. I could have fired him. He could have lost my business. So I hope this is giving you a little bit of idea of how important direct communication can be. So we were at different points on the directometer, which is something we came up in one of our classes. It's something that we made up. So today I'm just giving you a taste of the fish, not the whole fish. That's in the 7-hour program. And I will offer as much as I can in this time, and at the end, you know, let you know more about the course. So what does it mean? This is part of ICF definition of direct communication. What does it mean to use clear language that has the greatest positive impact on the client when you consider cultural variations? What do you think? Anybody want to give that a shot by answering it? That's something I invite you to be thinking about. How do you use clear language that has the greatest positive impact on the client given cultural variations? It's something to pay attention to, or like in the examples that I've just given, you might offend someone or lose business. Discover the distinction between being direct and being too directive. So that's also something that we're going to be talking about and I cover in the course. And lots of times people have questions about that, because when you look at the ICF competencies, and those of you that are wanting to become credentialed, it says you will fail your exam if you are, taking over for the client and kind of being too direct and telling them what to do. So we don't want to go that far, but then we do want to offer some direct communication. We're also going to talk about the use of communicating with metaphors to bridge the known and the unknown, or exploring the impact and expectations of direct communication at ACC, PCC, and MCC level. All right, so who's noticed a metaphor that I've used already?
Let's see.
Well, right. Those of you that can see the slide, it's the fish, right? In the fish in the market. When you go to a fresh foods market and they offer you a little sample. So today we're getting a sample of the fish and not the whole fish. Yeah. All right. Any questions, comments so far? Okay, so how do you consider cultural differences in direct communication to avoid misunderstanding or even offense, loss of face, or business? And I gave you two examples from my coaching, and I'm wondering what kind of examples those of you might share.
I think one, this is Lucille.
Yes.
I think another difference would be in understanding in different cultures, the different, I don't know if I should say roles, or how women interact with men, mm-hmm. and vice versa, and knowing
right.
what those differences are, because that can be a big issue in some cultures.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that, Lucille, and I absolutely agree. So when we're talking about working interculturally, I don't just mean the differences between Japan and the U.S. I'm talking about all the different cultural identities that each of us have. So, I'm from the U.S. I'm a native speaker. I'm, at midlife. And I am a woman, and I'm white, and I'm well-educated. All of those pieces, I'm heterosexual. All of those pieces are part of my cultural identity and how I view the world, and can have an impact on how I communicate. And just, Lucille, to go with your example of women, what I've seen a lot of in the workplace, and coached women around this, is women coming to me and saying, you know, my boss is telling me that in order for me to continue to move up the ladder, I need to speak up more in meetings. And in particular, I'm thinking of a client who that was her situation, and she had been raised in the rural Midwest, so that's another cultural identity difference. I'm in the city and was raised in the city. She was raised near me, but out in the country in a rural community. And what she viewed growing up was that women were just kind of in the background, and it was the men at the table who were leading and doing most of the speaking. And she needed to overcome that in order to advance in her organization. Now, some organizations have realized this difference, and they can have done some things as an organization to encourage the person to speak up. And so they've, you know, asked the person to submit a report in advance, or they have they can call on them in a meeting, because in some cultures, including Native American, you don't speak until the elders have spoken or you're called upon. So these are just really good things for you to know about your clients that you're working with, and even how it might be impacting your communication. Anyone else have a question or a comment here?
This is Anita, and I worked for World Vision internationally, and the first time I went to Zambia, I was told if the person with whom I was speaking did not have eye contact, that was showing respect.
Yes.
So just even the things that we think are important in our communication physically were quite different. And later, the same gentleman came to the U.S. He had been quite westernized, and so he looked me into the eye, and I said, oh, my goodness, don't you respect me anymore? And we just had a good laugh over it. But but even the most subtle differences, because coaching, I think, is really a Western phenomenon, and in third world cultures, it really seems amazingly different to them.
Yes. Thank you. It did start in Western cultures and now, of course, has expanded around the world. And I appreciate you bringing that up. And those of you that can see the slide, there is, you can see in the body language the conflict or misunderstanding. So that's a great example. Thank you, Anita. Anyone else?
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Is any kind of like fact list for each culture so that you would know what they expect?
Is there any kind of what for each culture? I didn't hear the word.
Well, like information packet or something like that, so you know what they would expect from, say, the female or, say, from the male, and how they expect you to act and how you're supposed to act towards them. Mm-hmm. So at least this way, if you know you're going to coach a different culture, you can have a welcome packet specifically designed for that culture and say, okay, this is, you know, what do you expect from me, or what do you wish me to do or not to do?
You know, there used to be a university, I think, out of Utah that had that little packets that you can purchase, and I'm not sure whether they still do that. But I really appreciate you bringing up the welcome packet, and I ask about, you know, tell me about your culture in our initial conversations and also in the welcome packet. Tell me something about your culture. And sometimes people in the U.S., especially if they're white, will say, well, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean, my culture? But you can ask a few more questions, you know, like tell me about the different cultural identities and explain what you mean about that and then how that might be impacting them and your work together. And then you can also have a conversation about, you know, we all have some cultural differences, even in our own community. But then what kind of culture do we want to create together as coach and client. Does that make sense?
Definitely, yes.
All right, and it sounds like someone has just joined with some background noise. If you could please click star 6 if you're dialing by phone to mute yourself, and then you can unmute yourself using that same system. Thank you. I think that did it. Otherwise, if you're in the online meeting, you can click the microphone to mute or unmute yourself. All right, any other questions or comments here? Really appreciate the questions and comments that are coming in. Okay, so we're looking now at cultural variations in direct communication. And just what is culture? Culture is the unique shared beliefs, values, communication, and behavior of a community of interacting people. So it doesn't have to be a nationality. And how do cultures differ in how directly they communicate? So what we want to avoid as coaches is to assume that our level of directness matches our clients. And the examples I gave earlier, again, being too direct in some cultures may be perceived as rude or even humiliating. And if you're coaching someone from the eastern part of the world, or maybe they are their parents were from the East, then the loss of faith, the humiliation, can be key not only in how you communicate with them, but their hesitancy maybe to communicate with you. So I had given the example earlier of with a Japanese organization that I was contracting with, to get clear on how direct I should be in coaching their leaders and executives. And but if I had crossed the line, would they tell me that? Maybe, maybe not, because then that they would be seeing that as something where a situation where I would be losing faith. So that's something that I also talk about with clients, is besides what's the culture that we want to have together, how direct do we want to be, but also how is trust established? We know establishing trust and intimacy is one of the core competencies and so important. And if I were to say, this is in writing, in my agreement with clients, and also something that I discuss with them, if I were to say or do anything that would offend you, how would you let me know? And sometimes it's just, I would say, you would know because I would be silent and not respond for a while. And being too indirect or silent may be perceived as not being a contributor. So if you're coaching someone who's used to being very direct, and a lot of Western leaders expect direct communication from you, and if you're not providing that, they might see you as not contributing. Like I talked about with my clients, but also as a coach, well, this coach is not delivering what I want. They're not providing me the direct feedback that I'm looking for, so I'm going to use another coach. Any questions or comments about this? Okay, what are you learning so far? I've learned from Harvard Research to stop every 10 minutes, and not only for questions and comments, but also to ask, what are you learning?
Well, this is Lucille. I think most of all, first of all, not to make assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Even in if you're the same nationality, mm-hmm. don't assume that you share the same values or those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a biggie. Sometimes you sit across from somebody who may look like you,
yeah.
Sound like you, and so you immediately prejudge as
yeah.
to what the expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is very direct in saying don't assume.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. But you got it. And you all can probably see in the background, I've written a book about bias because we all have unconscious bias. That's how our brains work. People are slotted into different categories automatically. And, you know, I teach people to do a check-in around that also. Anyone else?
Well, this is Anita again, and I think your question about if I were to say or do something to offend you, how would you let me know is very important because a lot of new coaches in particular are uncomfortable with silence or they have to learn to deal with silence.
Yes.
So if that were not clear, they might be waiting for a response from the client or something and, you know, trying to learn that patience involved in being silent. And I don't know. I think that's just an important question, too. And I think probably one response might be total detachment from the coaching relationship.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those clients that, you know, maybe you have a contract with the organization and you're on the third session and then they keep canceling and you can't get them to commit to another session.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you. Anyone else? What you're learning so far?
Marilyn, it's Marianne.
Yeah. Yes,
I just find this going through my head, this idea of the challenge to be both direct and supportive at the same time.
Mhm. Mhm.
Yeah. In the comments.
Yes, and you know the advanced version of that. I know it's covered in some training programs, and I know it is at ILCT. Is the compassionate edge, and we have a session in this class on the compassionate edge, and that's really delivering, you know, something with care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually after the relationship is established that it can be very direct, but it's with care. So Jim Bacolo was an instructor at ILCT, and the one that he used to use was as an example for the compassionate edge, was a client of his who was a leader and working long hours all of the time, and his family didn't like it, you know, they missed him, and his, you know, it was starting to make him a little grouchy and have some health issues, and so people at work had talked with him about it, his family had talked about it, his coach Jim had explored the issue with him, and Jim finally said, "Yeah, I'd like to know what kind of flowers that you like." And the person said, "Well, why? Why would you want to know what kind of flowers I like? What does that have to do with our coaching session?" And he said, "Well, when you end up in the hospital with a heart attack, I want to know what flowers to send you." So that was his way of, you know, making a statement, but also showing, you know, I do care about you. And I can think about a client that I was working with who her big complaint was, of course, you know, it wasn't, she didn't make any change. She didn't need to make any changes. It was her staff, you know, her team. And she couldn't trust them, she said. And as we explored some more, we saw that there were things in her own life where she was making commitments to herself, but not following through. And so that she was breaking trust with herself. And I said, you know, I think in order for you to, you know, get the trust that you want from your team, you need to address the trust issue with yourself. And she did. And, you know, miraculously, the team turned around too. So isn't that funny how that works? So, Marion, does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Anyone else? Learning, questions, comments so far?
This is Marcia. I like what you just said about the coach asking about the flowers, because in a lot of the cases that I've been learning from and reviewing and stuff like this, a lot about overworked and overstressed people and trying to help them find their life balance. Mm-hmm. And that's one good example of letting them realize, hey, I need to find my balance, and rather quickly, instead of trying to look at all the other little things first, they have to realize that they're the most important part of it and work on them first before all the other little goals.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
So I like that, because that's a good tool to put in the toolbox to be able to say, okay, what kind of flowers do you like?
Uh-huh.
And then that'll make it, it'll open up and make them go forward and forward thinking of how to help work with themselves.
Yeah.
So I like that. So thank you.
You bet. And I've just added the PCC marker on the slide here, is sharing comments without attachment to being right. I actually had a client that I started working with, and they were from Western Europe, and they were working in South America. And our first session, I said, what are your goals for the coaching? And they said, well, I want to improve my relationships with external partners, you know, that we're working with in this area, and I want to improve my negotiation skills. I said, great, can you give me an example or tell me a little bit more about that? Well, I want to prove to them they're wrong. I thought, wow, I'm not sure this person is even going to be coachable. And I said, so we have a saying in coaching, would you rather be right or be in a relationship? And he laughed. And I thought, okay, we are going to be able to work together. And then my next question was, how direct do you think is your communication? And he said, very direct. How direct do you think the communication is of the people that you are negotiating with in South America and wanting to improve relationships with? And he said, very indirect, and that's why I feel so frustrated. So just getting, switching from, you know, I need to prove to them they're wrong, which of course is not going to help relationships or negotiations, but shifting to, oh, this is a difference in communication styles, and I can look at how I might need to adjust a little bit. And at the MCC level, it would be creating enough communication space. So Anita had already mentioned that sometimes beginning coaches are uncomfortable when there are spaces in the conversation. And I will even encourage beginning coaches to count to 30 after they ask a question. Because if it really is a powerful question, it's going to take some time for them to answer. And that pause means could mean it was a really good question. So don't immediately ask another question or make another statement. Give some space. So that's And that can also vary a lot in different cultures. So some cultures are just more spacious than others. I was on the Advanced Cultural Competency Team for ICF, I think it was 2013, 2014, and there was a panel, and there was a woman from Japan, and she said, "Don't think just because I'm silent that I'm not communicating or contributing. I will, but I'm not, you know, going to be pushing out one statement." You know, she didn't say the rest of this, but the idea was some people, you know, push out one statement after another, and she was having these thoughtful pauses, and she could still be an effective contributor. It was just a different style. Okay, so consider a continuum. When you're establishing, when you ask clients, what do we want our communication to be, how direct, how indirect, what do we want the culture between the two of us to be, and to, so consider a continuum. It's not right or wrong. It's here's indirect and here's direct, and where do we want to be in our coaching partnership? Yes, respectful communication can look differently for direct or indirect, is the example. So I actually was sharing this with someone yesterday in a conversation. I'm hearing some background noise again, if you can hear it, please. It's some papers rustling. Thank you. And they said, "Oh, you know, my daughter-in-law from Taiwan has been living with us for 2 years, and she hardly ever speaks to me." And she said, "I didn't know that that was considered to be respectful, to not speak unless spoken to by an elder." And that she just thought, you know, the daughter-in-law didn't like her or something. So gender, age, cultural background, ethnicity, nationality, region, etc. are influencers. And you can increase awareness of direct or low contact and indirect or high context. And we've got a resource there on where to learn more about that. Direct or low context use words, not context, to provide meaning, and that's usually Western countries. And indirect or low context, the context is important. The nonverbal, what's not being said, meaning is implied. And I taught the first Korean cohort for ILCT, and the beginning of their conversations, their coaching conversations, totally different than what we might hear in the West. So there was an exchange of formal greetings, and then they just started speaking more about what was going on in the life of the client. And so by doing that, then the agreement for the session was clear to them. I didn't hear the, "What do you want to get out of today's session?" which is how we might start ours. That's actually what I want, as you heard, from my coach. I don't want to spend 15 minutes on formal greetings. I want to get right to the point. But in some cultures, that's not the case. And metaphors can be bridges. So some of the bridges between cultures, metaphors and stories, because those can be universal. And also metaphor, I call the back door to the brain, because our brains, our systems are automatically wired to be afraid of new things. You know, and that's why we think about fear as being an obstacle for a lot of our coaching clients, They're afraid to step into their future self or into the future. But if we use a metaphor, then the brain doesn't have that, drawbridge coming up with the alarms going off, because you're connecting something new to something old. The old is familiar, it feels safe to the brain, and so the new aspect of it is not as scary. So this is part of direct communication, is using metaphors. And then also, you are statements are so powerful. You know, you are, based on your knowledge of that client, you are someone who knows how to advance the organization. I've seen you and experienced what you've done over the last few months or the last 6 weeks, and so I can see that you are someone who makes a commitment and follows through. You know, you like it's acknowledging who they are, and that's what we think of as an advanced coaching at the MCC level, is at the being level, who they are, and that really has a big impact. So any questions or comments here? Takeaways? Okay, and I did mention that I've written a book, Breaking Free from Bias, Preventing Costly Complaints, Conflict, and Talent Loss. And so this is something that I've been using in my blogs and in my work. But it's those of you who are participating by phone, it's a circle with different cultural identities in it. So religion, ability, disability, political view, region, height, weight, socioeconomic level, age, sexual orientation, educational level, whether you're a native speaker or not, how you're dressed. Those are some of the examples. And just to pause for a minute and reflect on, which of your cultural identities do you identify the most with? And then ask yourself, what of cultural identities does your client most identify with? So if you can picture one of the clients that you're working with now and think about their different cultural identities and what they most identify with, and then ask yourself, based on that awareness of your own cultural identities and your clients, how might you then adjust your direct communication? And the example that I gave of the client from Western Europe who was working in South America, he needed, in order to achieve his goals, he needed to dial down his communication a little bit and adjust his expectations. The things were just going to go slower in South America. People were going to be less direct and progress would be slower than what he was used to in Western Europe. So those assumptions, addressing the assumptions that Lucille mentioned. Any questions or comments here?
Marilyn, this is Anita again. Sorry to dash in here, but you know, in Western culture, sometimes our identity feels marred as we get in the third of life. Mm-hmm. But in third world cultures, the older you are with a little gray in your hair or a lot puts you closer to the fire. In other words, you're honored and they treat you with the greatest of respect. So I found even teaching coaching classes, there's the identity with me as an older, wise woman, supposedly, as a teacher, has been an advantage. And so part of my challenge is to level the playing field, you know, as we want to honor people as experts of their own lives. Yeah. There's a tendency to want to know what I think about something, particularly in the Christian faith arm of our courses.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Anita. And that really ties into establishing the coaching partnership, doesn't it? Or even in the classroom. I have mapped out and integrated cultural competencies with coaching competencies, and that's something to really look at if I'm older than someone else, or, you know, I'm the professor. Like, I taught organizational behavior and international business in Hong Kong and Malaysia. And in Malaysia in particular, I was the professor. It was very revered, and a revered position. I was also one of only two, I guess there were three Caucasians or whites that were in the town at that time. So I would go in a restaurant and all the kids would turn around and stare at me. And that was a little, you know, unusual. It's not what I'm used to. But because I had this high rank of being the professor, that kind of, you know, offset it, protected me. But yeah, then in coaching, how do you handle that when people are looking to you for the answer and they expect you to be right and to kind of tell them what to do? What would you do? Tell me what to do. When we, in the West especially, see coaching as an equal partnership. So that is something to be addressed also in forming the coaching partnership. Thank you.
Well, and I think, too, when we're on the faith journey, you know, we're all at different places in the spiritual side of our lives, and so no one is the expert, and that makes it a little bit easier, and we can refer to the Bible or other resources, depending on one's faith, as a resource other than we.
Yeah.
I've been a professor in China and Africa and other places, too, and I realized that I just dropped doctor from my name and other things to try to equalize the playing field. But, you don't want your clients to put you up on a pedestal, and it impedes communication, I think.
Yes. Clients do, though, expect, you know, it's not all questions and answers again. It's not all questions and listening. So especially direct clients, especially certain populations like leaders in the West will expect you to say, here's, you know, as you talk about that, here's what I see. You know, and to let them know, or here's what comes up for me from your gut, from your intuition. And it's not all just questions and active questions. So I hope that's a main takeaway from today, as well as the cultural differences. Okay, and then I had some role plays. This was for a program that I did with one of the ICF chapters, but I don't think we're going to have time to do role plays. But this is typical of what we do in the class, is for each of the seven classes, and in the seven classes we're covering how you're dealing with ambiguity, how you're using your intuition. So this is the direct acronym. D is for dealing with ambiguity. I is for intuition. R is for recognizing cultural differences. E is expanding perspective. The C is for that clear, compassionate edge feedback. And the T is for transforming through metaphors. And I also have a blog series on this topic. So that's what we cover in the seven-session class. And the learning objectives are to demonstrate increased clarity and ease in the use of direct communication while not stepping across the line into advising or consulting. Being direct without directing, including using that compassionate edge. To demonstrate consistently stating purposes and checking status, staying responsible for the coaching process while dealing with ambiguity, because we live in a VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And we all are dealing with ambiguity, and our brains crave clarity. So how do we work within that? And then demonstrating increased mastery and using metaphor, intuition, and reframe to create new awareness. These are all part of direct communication. Demonstrating increased awareness of cultural variations in direct communication, the ability to make adjustments for those to have the greatest positive impact, and demonstrating skill in integrating direct communication with the other core competencies to expand perspectives and impact. So we have different characters, you know, that people can play during the practice part of our classes, and this is one. So Hamoud is a midlife Malay corporate leader. Coaching pace is slow, with plenty of time and space for reflection and reformulating responses. He prefers the coach's feedback to tie to his accomplishments, back to his vision and how it's positively affecting their team and organization, and has been passed up for promotion. So that might be something that we would role play in a coaching round within the class. Or people also bring the clients that they're working with, which I think really is greatest learning, so that they can find fine-tune that how direct or indirect to be with the support of our class and the feedback. So this is another one. Amelia is a 35-year-old Hispanic director of an NGO. She enjoys her job, married, and has children ages 10 and 8. Family is very important. She's involved in their activities as well as the large extended family, and her coaching goal is to feel less stressed. I mean, this is a lot of people. You know, they're out working, they have a family. Family is very important to them. They're involved in all their kids' activities, and they're using their mobile devices to stay on top of what's going on at work, even when they're not at work. And how do you get through that? So I've got a little, my direct meter up here. How ideal is your communication, your direct communication? And how will you make sure moving forward? We talked about addressing that in your contracting with clients. So I just want to say, as we're wrapping up here, thank you so much for your participation. I'd love to have you participate in the 7-session class starting Friday, July 20th. It's at the same time of day, and it goes for 7 weeks. There are some readings, but not a lot. The peer coaching in between is optional. I know some of you are already in peer groups and practicing. If you want to form new ones in the class, that's great. If you want to stay with your existing peer groups, that's fine as well. And again, a lot of learning is in the class. It's a lab type of a situation. So let's stop here and see if you have questions, comments, takeaways.
Hello. So I have a question. This is Salif.
Yes, Salif.
Yeah. And it may be a bit of a sideline because primarily, of course, the focus is the client. But because cultural, awareness and for also different reasons that have been mentioned, I have lately been wondering if my name, which is originally a Hindu Islamic name, could be an impediment in the sense that, as you mentioned, ambiguity and also adjustments are necessary. And my client, once I really launch my coaching business, although I am board certified, my clientele will primarily be American in the area of wellness. Mm-hmm. I've wondered sometimes if changing my name, because your presentation, your who you are in a very personal business can make a difference as to preconceived notions, cultural mm-hmm. approaches in the line of communication. So what would be an advice and aside from et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. I can advise you whether to change your name or not. I think that's a very personal decision, and I appreciate your concern about it. I think, you know, when we think about bias, there is existing bias against some cultural groups, and people may have an association by your name based on that, but I think it's an entirely a personal choice.
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. Anyone else? I have up on the screen now. What did you discover about direct communication and especially the cult and including the cultural differences, and how will you apply that to advance your coaching and business to expand your impact, reach, and service? Questions, comments, takeaways? I'm going to end the recording now.